Directly as a foreigner could be a bit challenging, depending on the area. More international places like Tokyo or Niseko are easier, but I mean they're priced accordingly. Usually, the contractors who service foreigners. Other places, people usually find that the best way is to get somebody like us, or depending on how big the project is, you might actually want to hire a part-time staffer or one to manage the local contractors for you. That's usually going to be a bit more practical. But we also need to look at zoning regulations. If you're allowed to rebuild, or if we need to call it a renovation, what are you allowed to extend? How high can it go? There's other stuff. I mean, the renovation company will obviously look at all of that as well. But initially, when we're looking at the listings, if something obviously says it's not rebuildable, that's something to consider. If it says you have to set back, or an extension to the house hasn't been legally registered because it was built a long, long time ago. So those are all things that we need to take into account in advance. If that's your plan, are you planning to demolish and rebuild, or just renovate, or expand, or what?
Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options.
So this is it. The last podcast episode, I think, that I'll be publishing before our summit, which takes place next weekend, 18th and 19th April at the Pullman Hotel in Tamachi, Tokyo, and online. And if you haven't gotten your tickets yet, well, not sure what you're waiting for, really. Saturday, which also means full weekend tickets, are almost completely sold out. And we keep receiving confused emails from folks who seem to think that the gala dinner attendance is included in their event tickets. So no, it is not, as we've explained here on a few occasions already. So if you'd like to attend what many consider the best and definitely the most fun and social part of the summit, which is promising to be even more fabulous this year, considering it's taking place at the Pullman's award-winning restaurant, which has a very luxurious menu. So those tickets, the gala dinner tickets, are separate tickets, folks. So if you want to make sure you can join, you do need to purchase a gala dinner ticket separately. They're on the same page, on the ticketing page on the summit's website at summit.realestate.jp. But once more, those gala dinner seats are separate to the event tickets, and we need to lock in dinner guest numbers in the next few days. So if you're joining us for the dinner, pause this recording right now, go grab yours. All of our speakers and sponsors, Emil from realestate.jp, Tracy from Tokyo Family Stays, Blanca from Arc Reform, myself, Ziv from NTI, Robert from innovatious.com, Matt from Akia's, Chai Yi and Ben from Shiki Properties, Mark from Yen Loans, Ben from Retire Japan, Shu and Brett from Akia Hub, Alicia from Axolotl Capital will all be there. My partner Bob and I will also be officially launching the Japan Real Estate Investment Evaluator System at the event, which is still half priced for the first month until the launch. So if you're the type of person who likes to browse Japanese property websites and try to figure out if any particular listing is a worthwhile investment or not, head over to JRE Invest Eval right now. That's JRE-Invest-Eval for evaluation.com, and sign up using coupon code EARLYBIRD, all one word, The system will help you analyze any tenanted investment property you find out there, residential or commercial, and give you a score for it. Is it a good investment, an okay one, or something you'd be better off avoiding? It'll calculate the real net yield for you. It'll assess all related risks, whether they're location-specific, property-specific, or market-related. It'll give you a list of next action items and information that needs to be verified before pulling the trigger, a list of documents you need to request from the listing agent, and a real actionable game plan for purchase. So we'll be showing off the system at the summit, as will Tate Mono IQ, who have built an equally impressive tool designed for larger portfolio holders and for realtors who want to share analysis info with their clients. So slightly different set of tools. Theirs is including disaster warning, other zoning info, portfolio analysis. So just different set of goodies. So yeah, 1 week from now, we're all pretty stoked to see you again face to face. Tickets are still available or on the stream, depending on which of the days you'd like to attend. They're all available on summit.realestate.jp. All right. So for today's episode, three shorter recorded calls for you today, all of them with first time buyers. And this first one, which is audio only, is with a German couple who, surprisingly enough, have never been to Japan yet, but are moving here on a working holiday visa, so for a period of 1 year. And they'd like to purchase a house at a budget of approximately 23 million yen, or about 150,000 US dollars at the moment. Their target is rural Japan, specifically Nikko and Matsumoto. And so we discussed the challenges and other unique aspects of living in the Japanese countryside, particularly for someone who's never lived here before. We explain how we can help, our consulting versus full purchase facilitation services, how viewings would work in their case, whether it's remote or in person, as well as the purchase process itself. So what's involved, how long it all takes, and that also has some bearing on their travel plans, of course. So enjoy this first call, and don't forget there are two more calls coming right after this. Okay, so I read through your email and you've mentioned that you're looking for a single family home. Let me just bring that up. And single family home, I'm assuming in those areas, small medium city with access to nature, onsens and Japanese culture, not too far from 3 to 5 hours from Tokyo. That's half the country. Okay, got it. Yeah. Okay. And then I'm assuming because of this nature proximity that you want a single family home, yeah? Not a resort condo or something of that sort.
I guess that's, yeah.
Mm. That's right.
Okay. Yeah. And what was your budget for this place, roughly?
So our budget is 2,300,000.
Million.
No, million, yeah.
23 million yen.
Yeah. About that.
Okay. So that should hopefully help us buy something that's, if it's okay with you, that's 20 years and younger. So you'll have at least 7 to 10 years where you don't need to worry about maintenance and repairs and stuff breaking down and that sort of thing.
That sounds nice.
Yeah. I mean, some people really love the old traditional places with the beautiful architectural features, but those take a lot of work to maintain. So I'm not sure which side of the fence you land on, but normally if it was me, I'd prefer something that I don't need to worry about fixing too much, something a bit more modern and in good condition.
Yeah.
I guess that's horrible. Yeah.
Okay. And have you actually been to any of these areas? Do you know what life is like in those near those cities that you've mentioned?
We have not.
We have never been to Japan.
You've never been to Japan?
No.
Okay, well, I'd love to take your money and help you buy a house anywhere you want to buy it, and we'll make sure it's a nice house, but don't you think you should maybe have a look at these areas first? Because they're very different in lifestyle, and they're very different in lifestyle from the main cities.
We haven't thought about it that much, but I'm not sure. Maybe we'll be open to checking it out.
Yeah.
I mean, we can help you out and send somebody with you on the trip and look at some properties while you're here, but I wouldn't pull the trigger and go jumping into buying something in a place that you're not sure you want to live in yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess we can be open to that if we get some suggestions for properties and maybe.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So in those areas that you have mentioned in your email, let's see, what's that? Nikko, Matsumoto, Tendo. I haven't been to Tendo, but Nikko and Matsumoto are beautiful.
What attracted you there, except the proximity to nature? Because the whole country is in proximity to nature.
Well, we have been talking about wanting to live in a place that's like have a population maybe around up to 100 or something. So a bit smaller, but still a lot of or enough people to maybe make it easier to interact with people. And
Okay.
so that's one of them. And since they were like in easy to get to Tokyo by train, not that difficult. At least
Yep.
that was the thought. And yeah, and that there were beautiful places. At least by looking at pictures and stuff, we thought there were nice
They are.
places.
They both are. But the smaller the population, the less you're going to have any kind of facilities. The convenience store or supermarket will be further away. The people will definitely not be speaking anything but Japanese.
Yeah.
How's your Japanese, by the way?
It's not good. We're trying to learn, but
And you're looking
yeah.
for a holiday home, or you're planning to move to Japan? And mostly holiday home. We're not
Holiday.
really. Yeah.
Yeah,
Okay.
so we'll stay there for a year and then go back to Norway and
Got
then
it.
keep it if we like it there. Yeah.
Okay, so it'll be yours to come back to every year for a few months whenever you want, kind of thing.
Yeah, we hope so.
Okay. Matsumoto is a city. And Nikko is, I think, a little bit smaller, but also a city. But you said you want to be close to nature, meaning you want to be in the suburbs of the city, or somewhere within city limits is okay as long as you can take a short drive to nature.
Yeah, I guess we rather want to live like in a city center, closer or walkable or bicycle distance to the shops and stuff.
You do want that. Okay, understand.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah,
And we can
okay.
also like live in a city that is maybe a train stop away from a bigger city. We don't have
Yep.
to, that's if you find something
Well, both of
just.
these are not, though. Nikko City, Matsumoto City, I haven't looked at the third one yet, but Nikko and Matsumoto are not within a station to a big city. I mean, they're close enough to Tokyo, but they're not within a station to any big city.
Yeah, we're thinking about either smaller cities
Okay,
from that,
okay.
but like, yeah.
Utsunomiya, maybe in case of Nikko, and then near Matsumoto, I'm seeing Nagano, I guess, right? Would be the nearest big city, big-ish. Okay, got it. So how do you want to proceed? I mean, you've read through our explanation of services document. You know how we can help. We're a little bit swamped at the moment, but by the time you would have come here and looked at places and seen some listings, we'll probably be in a position to fully assist somebody with the purchase again. But can I advise that you first come and visit, that we make, combine your visit with maybe looking at some property listings in those areas, just so you'll know if you really want to live there, or do you want to do everything remotely before you get here?
We can discuss it, I guess, a bit
Yeah.
and then get back to you.
Have a think,
But
'cause you're not buying something super cheap in the countryside. You're buying a good quality home that is supposed to be comfortable and livable and rentable for a while, and you're spending a fair bit of money on it. So
yeah.
maybe pinpoint your preferred location first. And there, if you've never been here, I'm sure there are a few other cities aside from those three that you'll definitely want to check out in those areas as well. So I don't know, come for a couple of weeks and tour a few of them, and we'll try to organize a couple of listings in each location that you can look at, so you see what's available in that price range and that kind of profile, and then maybe be in a better position to decide. I mean, up to you. We have a lot of customers who just buy remotely and then come here and they're happy, but it just because you've never been here and you're kind
Yeah.
of at the upper range of the holiday home budget, so maybe give it a little bit more thought.
Yeah, we will definitely discuss that. Yeah. It sounds
Awesome.
like a good thing to do, yeah.
Awesome. So we're
Amazing.
here. Any which way, and whenever you want to proceed, let us know, and we'll take it from there.
We are moving in July. Yeah, so when should we
Moving where?
eventually come
Moving
please?
where? What do you mean?
To Japan in July, that's our plan
Oh,
to.
you are moving to Japan. Yeah.
In July. Yeah. So we
Oh,
have
that's what
a.
I, sorry, that's what I was asking, if it's going to be a holiday home or if you're moving here. So you are moving here?
Yeah. You're
Yeah,
moving here for a
for a
year.
year. For a year. Okay. Can I ask on what kind of visa?
Well,
Working holiday visa.
Working holiday. Oh, you're under 30.
yeah, barely.
Oh, got it, got it. So you want to have the house ready for you to live in by the time you get here in July.
Yeah, or
Or
August.
if it's like feasible to come down and look at some places and then buy while we're there. That's also possible. You can, but the purchase process will take you a couple of months, maybe 2, 2.5 months. So you'll need to rent an accommodation for that period of time.
Yeah, then maybe we'll visit and look at the properties and then handle the buying process from home.
Okay, so you'll have the visa for a year, so you'll come here, check it out, decide which one you want to buy, and then go back home until the purchase is finalized, and then come here to spend the rest of the year. Is
Yeah,
that what you
or
mean?
hopefully. Yeah, I mean that.
I mean, we come down before, because we're moving in July, so you can come down like earlier than July and have a look, and then use our
Okay.
holiday, right? Except from July
Right.
for a
So
year.
one trip to have the look at the areas and pick the property and then come back and live in it.
Yeah, but we'll have
Okay.
to talk about it.
Yeah, we
The
have to discuss
Yeah, no, of course. I'm
that's
just
why.
trying to give you the time frame of what that would look like. So if you want to move here and settle into the property in July, that means that settlement needs to be completed by the beginning of June, just so you can connect all your utilities and have everything ready for you on time. So that means your trip to look at the properties should be around March or April, I think.
Okay.
All right. So have a discussion, see if that works out for you, and let me know, and then we'll take it from there.
Yeah.
All right. Great meeting you. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank
Take care.
you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in web solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company, Innovatius, is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com, and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read, detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today. All right, so this next call is with an Australian buyer, and he's also looking for a holiday home, but this one in Nagano and also a lot cheaper. So we talk about the risks of purchasing older, cheaper wooden houses in Japan, the importance of structural inspections, how to conduct property research, viewings, inspections, and so forth, how much each stage of this purchase process would cost him, how renovations would work for a non-resident owner like himself, and also how to deal with properties that include farm or agricultural land, which is not that straightforward in Japan. So enjoy this second conversation. And again, one more call coming right at you right after this. Okay, so I browsed through your email and I saw there was one listing there in Nagano, right?
Yeah.
Did you want me to share that one on screen so we're both looking at the same thing?
Yeah, that's fine. I think it's sold now.
Oh, it's sold already, is it?
Yeah, I think so. Well, it's not there anymore.
Oh, okay. Well, don't worry about it. Yeah, you're right. It's not there. Okay, so... Okay, so do you want to give me a bit of a background criteria, whatnot?
Yeah, yeah. So that area is, I guess, our preferred area, sort of around that Nagano area, looking to buy something for access to the snow, pretty much.
Yep.
So that kind of place, without being an expert. Obviously, in Japan.
Was that a condo or a house or a resort villa or what was it?
It was a house.
A house on a resort or completely standalone?
Standalone.
Okay.
In a small village. Pretty close.
Okay, so no onsen fees, communal water fees, rubbish removal fees, like nothing. There was not a resort property. Yeah. Okay, got it. Do you remember how old it was, how much it cost, what was anything about it?
It was around 34,000 Australian.
Okay.
It was definitely old. It was a bit of a fixer upper.
Which is old fine. As in 20, 30 years old or 40, 50, 60 years old or
I'd probably say around 40-ish years old. Not sort of, okay. Not IKEA level rundown or anything.
We don't know that without a structural inspection. I mean, it obviously it looks the way it looks, which could be great, but we don't know anything about the foundation, the roof, the tilting, sinking, termites, like stuff that we don't know yet.
Yeah, absolutely.
At 40 years old in Japan. Yeah, I mean, they're not built super durable. So at 40 years and over, they're usually going to have at least one or two major structural issues. So something to look at.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to know, obviously. We're pretty aware of the, you know, that they don't particularly build things to last.
Yeah.
Or at least didn't used to. So, yeah, it was... around I think it was like three and a bit bedrooms, obviously Japanese style bedrooms. But that was, I think the reason I wanted to kind of send that one through is more so as a general, like, you know, this is kind of what we're looking at, this is the area. Price range probably around 50,000 Australian.
So up to what, 5 million yen ish?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the conversion.
Well, it's not the outright bottom of the barrel, but it's pretty old and worn down. What you're gonna get for that?
Okay. Again, we'd be, you know, as doing a bit of reading. Like, I'm subscribed to that newsletter.
Cheap Houses Japan. Yep.
Yeah, and there's some interesting stuff in there. Yeah, so again, if we end up spending a little bit more outright and then you don't have to spend more on renovations, I guess that's ideal.
Well, but if you're looking at anything that's 40 years and older, you're definitely looking at some renovations. It could be a small cosmetic thing. I'd actually prefer something we can see with our eyes, because then we can, you know, it's interior, it's cosmetic, we can quantify. It's the stuff that we don't see that I'm worried about at this age. But yeah. So there'll always be something, but hopefully not too much. I mean, the closer you stick to, as close as you can get to 20, 30 years and younger, the better your chances are of not having any major issues.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that makes sense. Because that's post the earthquake policies and stuff as well, right?
Earthquake is older than that. Earthquake is 1981, so that's like 45 years now. But even if they are up to earthquake standards and they were built 40, 45 years ago, they're going to have other issues.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's fine. And then I guess, so I guess seeing with your own eyes, what does that necessarily mean to you? Because I've read that you guys do remote viewings, right?
Yeah, so we can help you with the purchase, we can help you with the management. What does what look for us? Sorry, what do you mean?
I guess the inspection, sorry, like if you,
Well, I
I
mean, if
think.
we see, for example, potential for roof leaks, we know that a complete roof could be up to 3-4 million yen to replace. If we see foundation cracks or slight tilting in some of the rooms, it could be foundation repair or flooring issues, which we know is going to be a, 2-3 million to fix. But if we see tilting in more than one room on in the property and we see issues with the foundation that we think might be related to tilting or to sinking or land sediment issues, that's creeping upwards toward about 10 million yen, right? And then if we see termite tracks and it's not a completely detached part of the house, meaning they could have gotten through that point, they could have gotten in deeper somewhere, that's very hard to quantify as well. But I mean, a brand new rebuild from scratch is about 15 million yen, so there's a limit to how much you'll want to pour into something. I mean, if it was an architectural wonder and you want to preserve it, that's a different story. But if it's just something that's supposed to be livable, as a holiday home, there's a limit to how much you'll pour into it, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I guess so. For those, do you see that just through your remote inspections, or is it? I know I can. You can pay more for a physical inspection, right?
There's two terms there, so let's separate them. There's viewings, which is an agent is not going to take an offer from you before somebody's viewed the property, assuming it's a vacant property. So that's sending somebody over, or if you're here, somebody comes with you and, you view the property, you make sure there's nothing in there that you really hate and just changes your mind about the whole thing. And then if we're happy with what we saw, then we submit an offer. On the offer, we'll note that it's pending a structural inspection. And then we have people coming in with the right tools and they crawl under the floor space if they can to look at the foundation. They go up to the attic space to look at the underside of the roof. They measure tilting and sinking and the width of the cracks on the walls and the foundation, and they give you a very detailed report on what they think might be wrong with the house.
Yeah, okay. So very similar
But
to.
I'd only go ahead and commission that once we have an offer that's been accepted, because that's going to cost you $1,000, $2,000 depending on how big the house is.
Yeah, okay.
The viewing trip would cost you to send somebody to Nagano. If we happen to be lucky enough to have a partnered agent who has a colleague in Nagano, it might be a cheap trip. But otherwise, let's assume we're sending somebody over from Tokyo, which is where most of the bilingual staffers that we can recruit are. And that would be a few $100 worth of trip. I don't know, 300, 400, or $500, depending on how far they need to go and what sort of transportation is available to them. So that's the cheapest leg in. And in any case, no agent will take an offer without the viewing taking place. So that's the first step. It's just for your own personal use. Yeah, you're not planning to rent it out or anything like that.
I guess that would kind of depend on a what it's what it, the place would be like, and then I guess it's suitability, but it would only be it'd be like a holiday house, and then I read through all your things about Airbnbs and stuff as well.
I mean,
So,
you
but
can
that's
always
a
let friends and family stay there, and if they happen to pay you, for their share of utilities or whatnot, that's your business. But if you want to list it on Airbnb, then we need to first make sure it's compliable with the license requirements.
I did. I went through all that on your basically terms of service that was sent through. So yeah, I think that would very much depend on the type of place we got, its location, I guess. But the
So it's
primary use.
we're basically buying, yeah, we're buying a holiday home for yourselves and then seeing if we can do anything with it after settlement, kind of thing.
Pretty much. That's a good
Okay,
summary.
got it.
And then I'll just make sure I tick off the main questions I had. Did I miss anything? I think so. Whereabouts are you guys based? Sorry.
We're based in Fukuoka, but we work nationwide.
Okay. Yeah. And then so. Oh, no, you go.
Yeah, no, I'm saying we work with the agents, with the property managers, with the building management companies in each and every location. So we don't really care where the property is physically. We just give you a single point of contact and we find the best people to work with in every location.
Yeah, okay. And it's okay for the viewings to be remote.
Well, but when we say remote, we need to send somebody over. The listing agent is usually not going to be able to do it for us. So we're going to have to send somebody over. And then they will do a remote viewing with you, connecting with you via Zoom and showing you. I mean, you'll tell them what to focus on if you want, ask questions, etc.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, okay. And that's what you were sort of saying, that'll be the 300 to 500 to get someone from Tokyo to go and do the remote
viewing. Normally, I would assume, yeah, depending on exactly where the property is and who it is, but yeah.
Yeah, that's okay. As a rough estimate, that's fine.
So, I mean, if they're already going out there, we might as well give them 4 or 5 listings to view and spend the day. If they're, you know, taking the day out anyway, it's a bit more cost efficient. And also, if you only look at one of them and that happens to fall through for whatever reason, then that was the entire viewing trip wasted, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm more than happy to do things the most efficient way. Yeah, not
so either listings like this one that you've picked on yourself, or we can have the agent that will appoint to the case research them for us based on your criteria. Also, are you on AkiaMart? Because, I mean, Michael's is an amazing newsletter, but it's hand-curated. There's not a huge amount of properties there. AkiaMart's got like 500,000 listings at any given time, so it might be a good idea to get a subscription there as well.
Okay.
You can use my name as a discount code when you're checking out on their subscription.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own. But longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
Listing depends on whether you want us. If you just want to be introduced to an agent, I'll introduce you and jump out. You don't need to pay us for introductions. If you want me holding your hand, guiding due diligence, reviewing the inspection report, the contract together before we go ahead at every stage, etc., then we can join as a consultant. That's a few hundred bucks, 88,000 yen, so about 900 Australian. And the agent charges what the agent charges. That's on settlement.
Yeah, okay. It's basically a commission.
At your level of, at your budget level, the commission is always going to be 330,000 yen. That's the minimum for realtors these days.
Yeah, I think I had read that, which is fine. So yeah, I would definitely engage you as a consultant. Again, I don't know all the ins and outs like you guys do. I would not want to, I guess, fall into a pitfall and then
I mean,
be
it's
trying to get my way
Japan.
back
No
in.
one's gonna swindle you and run for the hills with your money. But I mean, you can still buy a dump. Yeah, I mean, the agents are they're great. They're professional. They're by the book, and they'll help you buy whatever you want to buy. But it's not their job to strategize or advise or anything like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know they're not like Western salespeople.
No.
Okay, so let's say moving forward, I do want to engage you guys to, I guess, curate, etc.
Curate listings.
That's, yeah.
The agent that we'll work with will do that. So what I'll need from you is a set of criteria. You've mentioned the budget, you've mentioned approximately the location, 3 bedrooms. So put all of that down in writing for me. And then I'll see which agent that we work with is most readily available. When were you planning to pull the trigger on this one?
We're flexible. I've been looking for, yeah, a year and a bit on and off,
Okay.
so there's flexibility there.
So I'll reach out to a few agents, whoever's most readily available. I'll kick off a little WhatsApp chat group with them. You've got, I'll just reply to the last one of the emails you sent to us with just a blank signature. So that'll have my mobile number at the bottom. Just add me on WhatsApp. Hang on, mobile number for WhatsApp. Below. Just add me on there, let me know it's you, and then I'll kick off a WhatsApp chat group with the agent, and we'll take it from there based on that criteria that you'll send to me. So you can send that to me on WhatsApp as well. I'm a lot more responsive there than on email.
Okay, easy.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think that's probably it.
You'll have a lot more once we start looking at listings, don't worry.
And
There'll be
there'll be a lot
plenty
more
of
that sort of.
questions coming.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, there's probably a lot of questions I've already got, but there'll be questions for, I guess, as we move forward. And you have answered a lot of them already, just in this conversation.
Yep.
And then again, a lot of the other ones are answered through the document that Anna sent through. Just a matter of rereading
It'll
it.
just be the nuances of what to watch out with this particular listing over another, what the sewage is like, retainer walls, the garden, just stuff that you might not be aware of. That's mostly where we'll come in. And then in reviewing the documents, making sure there are no big costly surprises anywhere in there that we haven't discussed.
Yeah, it was extremely helpful. When it comes to, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but when it comes to, say, doing construction works, etc., do you find that people find it difficult to engage with, I guess, trades and construction?
Directly as a foreigner could be a bit challenging depending on the area. More international places like Tokyo or Niseko are easier. But I mean, they're priced accordingly, usually the contractors who service foreigners. Other places, people usually find that the best way is to get somebody like us, or depending on how big the project is, you might actually want to hire a part-time staff or one to manage the local contractors for you. That's usually going to be a bit more practical. But we also need to look at zoning regulations. If you're allowed to rebuild, or if we need to call it a renovation, what are you allowed to extend? How high can it go? There's other stuff. I mean, the renovation company will obviously look at all of that as well. But initially, when we're looking at the listings, if something obviously says it's not rebuildable, that's something to consider. If it says you have to set back, or an extension to the house hasn't been legally registered because it was built a long, long time ago. So those are all things that we need to take into account in advance. If that's your plan, are you planning to demolish and rebuild, or just renovate, or expand, or what?
Again, yeah, that's That would be dependent on the type of property, but we're open to, I guess, most things.
You want to have
I
creative
know
freedom with
the,
it.
yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
And I know that place I sent through had a vacant block across the road, which was
Okay.
available to be included in the sale. But upon further research, it was zoned agriculture 3 or 5, I think.
Which you can't
So.
buy without being a farmer. But if it's under 500 square meters, the seller can convert it to standard land as part of the settlement process. So that might have been an option.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, because I obviously had a look at it, and I didn't know you had to be a farmer, but it said you had to build something to do with agriculture on it. You were going to, you couldn't just put a house on it, for example.
Yeah, those are the kind of things that are that get, you know, documented and approved through the local farmers union. But the problem is you can't join that unless you're a resident and showing that you're actually going to be farming. So usually what our clients do is if it's smaller than 500 square meters, they ask the seller to convert it as part of the handover. That's easy enough procedurally. If it's over 500 square meters, we can ask the seller if they can split it off because that will be a lot harder for you to take ownership of. So we ask them to split it off the sale, but they may or may not agree depending on how easy it would be for them to sell it down the track.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so that's yeah, that's interesting stuff to know that I probably wouldn't have found just through Google searches. Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, I think I'm happy to move forward.
Okay. Send me a
I'll
WhatsApp
add you to
message with
WhatsApp.
the criteria. Yeah. And also, if you happen to come across any listings, whether it's via Michael or Akiamar or wherever you might search, send them my way. And if they come up during our chat with the agent, just send them into the chat group we'll have with the agent.
Okay, easy.
All right.
Yeah,
I look
thank you for
forward
your
to it.
time, Zub. It's much appreciated.
Pleasure. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, take care.
You too. Bye-bye. So, one final call for today, and this one is with a hybrid holiday home buyer. So, somebody who wants to utilize their holiday home for short-term stay purposes throughout the year and maybe use it once or twice a year at most themselves. So, once more, we talk about why super cheap houses can end up being a lot more expensive, what due diligence on these particular types of properties actually includes, what unique purchase criteria she should be considering if the property is going to be utilized as a short-term stay hospitality property. And we also talk about what working with Japanese property managers is actually like, and again, how our services work and how we might be able to assist with that, including the handling of funds for non-residents who cannot open a bank account in Japan, like herself. We talk about how to determine if a listing would be feasible for a short-term stay license or not, and whether there'd be available management companies to handle it in each location that she's considering. Where should she be looking if her total budget is up to about 100,000 US? And a bit about the hands-on nature of running hospitality properties overall as well. So enjoy this last conversation, and I'll see you one last time on the other side. How's life in Vietnam? I've never been. It's definitely on my Asian bucket list.
It should be. It's a great place to visit and also to live. So there's a wide variety of places to explore from the north all the way to the south, and amazing food,
So I
very
hear.
friendly people.
Yes, that's my main reason for going. I can't wait for that, actually.
Indeed.
Fantastic. So I wanted to, I just quickly reviewed, and I should actually have a chat with Faye, who was supplying you with more listings. That price range and those age structures, you're scraping the bottom of the barrel. I'm happy to connect you with an agent who'll help you buy whatever you want to buy, but if I was consulting on the purchase, all I'd be saying is no, don't buy that, too old, too many renovations, too many repairs.
Yeah.
So I don't know that there's much that we can help except to advise that you might be buying into a lot more expenses than you think with these older, cheaper properties.
That's what I hear, and it's definitely a very important thing to consider. I found this listing which I shared to Hannah, and it's essentially free. $600 is close to nothing. And I was just wondering to understand better from what I can see of the listing. Of course, I pulled it through a translation, is that it doesn't mention anything that's off. I understand some properties could be the
It's
road
kind of
might be
assumed,
so.
at this age and at this price that you're buying something that's basically deteriorated to the point of no return. That's why they're priced this way.
Okay.
The land may or may not be rebuildable. So if you're buying it for the purpose of, in the near or far future, demolishing and rebuilding a brand new home, which is going to be, I don't know, 15, 20 million, depending on what kind of house. Then if the land is rebuildable and that's the purpose, then, it could be a great bargain on a piece of land, but a house or any structure that's on at this price level, it's going to be 50, 60, 70 years and older. And it's pretty much assumed that it's going to have major structural issues. And if you keep it, if you renovate and repair and keep it standing, you're still looking at a few thousand bucks of annual expenses just to keep it standing.
Okay. Okay, no, that's very
Which is
good
probably
to.
why people get rid of them, right?
Right. That's a good, very fair point. And so I would say maybe putting that listing aside, I would like to understand a bit more on the process because I am as well exploring if I can raise my budget. And something that I am very much interested in is to invest in a property which could be used for short-term rental for Airbnbs. And so I would be curious to understand from your perspective, what is the average budget that would be required for a short-term rental? And then to also know if Nippon Tradings can do management for short-term rentals or if it's more for long-term rentals that you focus on.
Well, I'll answer the last question because that's the easy short that the short answer first. We can help with any kind of management of any kind of property. The reason we're mainly managing long-term lease for our clients is because that's what they're interested in. They tend to be more semi-passive investors. They don't want to be hands-on looking at vacancy, occupancy, campaigns, running a business. They're not interested in that. So we do have a handful that do, but the vast majority of them are happy to just collect a monthly paycheck and not have to worry about anything until a tenant moves out, right? So that's the reason you're seeing more of those. But we manage everything through third parties. So whichever city you're operating in, we'll find the best property manager to serve you in that city or in a nearby city for short term and medium term.
Okay.
There's not as many companies, so we might need to go to Sapporo to find somebody who can manage in Otaru or whatever the case may be. There are at least two or three companies, I think, from memory that do operate in Otaru. Whichever property management company you'll be going with, if they're able to deal with you directly, then you don't need us. Then you might loop us back in if they're not doing their job properly and you want to change over. But if you're dealing with a local traditional Japanese property manager, then you probably always need somebody like us as a proxy between you because most of them are not going to be able to wrap their head around the concept of working with non-resident foreigners, receiving, sending funds overseas. That's not something they do on the regular.
Okay. So that's great to hear that you could also support with short-term rentals.
We can,
And
yep.
you did also mention an important point, which was how to manage the funds being transferred from overseas. What is the typical process? Because I did read about, there's no escrow accounts in Japan. How would it, practically speaking, happen if I was to go
For
forward
management or
with
for the
a
purchase or which
for
one?
the purchase and for management, I would say.
So for the purchase, you're going to be dealing either with a proxy like ourselves or a buyer side realtor who's foreigner friendly and able to work with foreigners. They'll be representing you in front. They or us will be representing you in front of all of the third parties involved, the seller, the lawyer, the seller's agent. If you buy a condo, the building management company, whatever. So they'll be dealing with all of that. You'll be sending funds to them. And they'll be distributing it domestically for the purpose of the purchase. Okay. And then for management, again, if you're working directly with a foreigner-friendly property manager who's worked with foreign landlords, then they should be able to hang on to the income for you and send it back to you whenever you're ready to receive it. If you're working with a more traditional one, because you can't open a bank account in Japan as non-residents, and because they, again, can't really handle overseas communications and transfers, then somebody like us usually sits in the middle, collects your rental income into our bank accounts, gives you an annual statement, and then you tell us when you want funds sent over to you. If you're just managing a holiday home, for example, you need somebody to pay the bills for you. So same story, the bills need to be paid at the Japanese convenience store or from a Japanese bank account, or depending
Right.
on each municipality and their utility companies and contractors are different, but you'd need somebody like us in the middle to hold on to a retainer and pay those bills out of the retainer for you.
Okay. And those bills include as well the annual taxes for property,
Correct.
insurance, etc. Okay.
Yes, and utilities and any one-off payments like renovations, repairs that you might need to make.
Okay.
And cleaning and airing and gardening, like whichever local contractors you need to be employing.
Okay. So that can all be managed through you with third party
We do all of that, yeah.
involvement. Yeah. Okay. Okay, very good. So then maybe back to the question, which is on a short-term rental property. What, realistically speaking, because I think it's important to understand what's
So
real.
that really depends on location. If you're looking at Kyoto, for example, I'd say don't look at less than $500,000 house because Kyoto municipality is very strict on short-term stay regulations. A lot of the houses are connected to like terrace townhouses connected to other houses too close to the street. They're never gonna get a license. The short-term stay property managers that we work with in Kyoto, Osaka, usually quote minimum price of $300,000-$500,000 to enter with something that might be compliant in those cities. Other locations where the municipality doesn't really care much and doesn't stipulate any strict regulations, maybe you could get away with anything. But it's also a question of what would be appealing to guests, right? We're not the experts on that. Whichever short-term stay property management company we'll be working with in each area would know the local municipality regulations, would know what properties are likely to be feasible with a license and which ones are not. And they would also know what sort of income you can maybe expect or what sort of occupancy rates you can expect based on their experience.
Okay.
Otaru, we don't have any clients operating in Otaru, but I do have one client who purchased there and then continued to manage by himself. He mentioned that the local municipality is pretty strict there. So we can search. I mean, there's two ways we can go about it. We can pay a short-term stay licensing research company to tell us to produce a report for each listing and tell us if it's likely to get a license or not, and if not, what can be done with it, if anything. Or we can simply. I mean, you can pay, it still costs money, but you can pay us to research local short-term stay property management companies, get in touch with them, float the listings to them, and get their opinion about it. They're not going to charge for that, but you still need to pay us to find those companies, right?
Okay. And so what
But
would be
if that's definitely a criteria and one of your prime goals with the property, then those are all things to check before we go ahead and purchase anything.
Right, absolutely.
Now, if
So
you're actively looking at property in Japan, you should check out Akiya Mart. That's Akiya hyphen Mart, Mart, akiyamart.com. It's the Zillow of Japan, built for buyers who are actively hunting for a home in Japan and want a much more Western style web browsing experience than the typical local Japanese websites. Now, we've got an exclusive 30% off promo code for the Akiya Mart Pro annual plan. That's the one that gives you full access to Airbnb zoning maps, hazard maps, sold data, and over 500,000 listings nationwide at any given time. So if you're serious about buying in Japan and you want an easier way to search, this is the best tool that we know of. So you can use my code ZIV, ZIV at checkout and get 30% off your Akiya Mart Pro annual plan at akiyamart.com.
So at the moment, I am exploring if I can access a credit line through my bank for a higher budget and focused on short-term rentals. If that's
Okay.
the case, I would be looking at probably between 80 and 100,000
Okay.
USD. And so within that budget and full budget, let's say including renovations as well as ensuring compliance for the local, regulations. I don't know if you have any recommendations on areas that I should look into, or you did also mention that you can provide a paid service where you do this research and then propose some listings. So how would you
So
suggest we proceed?
Otaru is not a choice, it's just an option. Well,
It's
what's
just an
your
option.
okay.
Otaru is an option. We're really, I would say I'm open to Pretty much anywhere. I would like
So
to focus on a return.
are you looking for a holiday home that you can rent out, or are you looking for a strictly short-term stay investment property that you can maybe use sometime? Like, which angle are you coming from?
A short-term investment property. So for short-term rentals, an investment property, which we could use, let's say, once a year for holiday home.
Okay, and the budget is up to about 100,000 US.
Correct.
Okay, and 100,000 US at the moment is 15 million yen-ish. Is that just the listing price or everything, including all the purchase costs? Because they,
Including the purchase costs
including all the purchase
and
costs. Okay, so
combined for
worst
short-term rentals.
case, yeah, so worst case, let's say 15 million, hoping that we don't, because you said that's to include renovations as well, right?
And furniture.
And furniture. Okay. So that gives us a listing price of about 13 million yen. To get the short-term stay going, I'd say conservative, maybe less, but let's say deduct about 2 million yen from that. 11 million yen listing. Just trying to think. Somewhere on the outskirts of a big city is where I would go with that kind of budget. So as close as I can get to Fukuoka City or central Yokohama City. Maybe somewhere between Saitama City and Tokyo, if we're lucky. The outskirts of Osaka, like towards where it's already technically out of Osaka, but actually near Osaka Airport, Kix. Those would be the locations I would look at. Because all of the tourist destinations, Otaru is interesting because of the ski, but it's a small town with a local municipality that's not super short-term stay friendly. I like your chances of finding a property management company and slightly less strict municipal regulations nearer a big city, I would say.
Yeah, that sounds
But
interesting.
this is all educated guessing and brainstorming. I mean, we can dig into particular short-term stay research companies near each of those areas and see what they say.
I would be interested to explore that in more detail.
Okay, though we'll need to focus on one area at a time again, because whether we put hourly research into it or we float listings for license compliance, that's all going to cost money, and it's going to cost again from scratch if we go to a different municipality and start the whole research there. So maybe give us a list of areas prioritized, which ones you'd like to focus on first. Think about it from a holiday home perspective. Where would you rather spend your holidays, I guess?
I would say priority would be on Fukuoka. We also
Okay.
have a foreseen trip that's already booked at the end of April, so
Okay.
potentially, depending on where we are in this process, we could maybe actually visit the property. So that would be the priority, I would say, around Fukuoka.
Got it. So we can. I'm just thinking, there's one guy that I spoke to recently, very, very cluey, kind of switched on guy. He used to work for Airbnb for a long, long time, and now he started his own company doing short-term stay management. Actively, he's doing it in Tokyo, but he's very interested in expanding nationwide. He might be a good one to, if you don't mind me being a guinea pig, he might be a good one to try and test with other cities as well.
He's a personal
That
contact
we,
of yours.
yes. I'm just thinking about, because that would be the easiest way for me to do a bit of at least preliminary research without having to charge you for research hours, is if we float it to him and ask him if he's interested in pursuing that as a test case for himself as well. Then he might look into the municipal regulations and potential listings and stuff like that for us, right? And if he rejects it, whether because of budget or because he's not ready to work Fukuoka yet, because that's like the other side of the country for him,
Right.
then we can go the more traditional route and hook up. I know at least one short-term stay management company that manages Fukuoka. Actually, the same company that does the license research for us. They also manage
Okay.
properties, but also only in Fukuoka, I think prefecture. So maybe even if we're out of the city limits, they'd be okay. And they would hopefully give us some input without charging as well.
Okay.
So
And
we
do
can,
you
yeah,
have an
sorry, go ahead.
idea of what would be the expected ROI on a short-term property rental in the Fukuoka Prefecture
As a
on the city
huge
outskirts?
like rule of thumb, if it's run very well, very smoothly, like well-oiled machine in the right place with the right decking and the right kind of marketing and advertising, it could potentially double whatever you'd get on long-term leases in that city, whether it's Fukuoka or another city. So if we say that Fukuoka City, for example, normally for long-term leases in good profile properties, we normally get to 5, maybe 5.5% on the edges of the city, if we're lucky, before tax, then potentially a super well-run short-term stay operation could maybe double that. So if we're lucky, maybe 10%.
Okay.
And Tokyo, similarly, if we get 3-4% in Tokyo, then maybe 6-7% if it's a super, super well-operating minpaku short-term stay property.
Okay. Yeah, 'cause of course I am going to weigh the ROI estimate against what I could potentially borrow at, so I would want it
I'd
to
weigh it
be.
against the mental bandwidth you'll need to run an operation like that because that is time consuming. It's not a full-time job, but it's not far from it.
Although the third party management would be doing the day-to-day operations, right?
Yes, but you need to make decisions on a very frequent basis with a short-term stay property. It's not like long-term where, again, you need to make decisions every couple of years. Here, you need to constantly look at occupancy rates. How are we doing? How profitable are you're running a business, essentially. You're not It's not semi-passive, right?
Correct. But at the same time, the third party management, they would be managing, accepting guests at the check-in,
Yeah, I'm not
or
talking
that
about
would be.
operations. No, not talking about
Okay.
operations. I'm talking about fine-tuning the business, and they're not necessarily going to be very proactive. So it's on us as the owners to make sure that we're getting the right kind of return, and if not, poking them to get suggestions. What do you think we should do? Should we throw a campaign? Should we reduce the price per night? They'll
Okay.
mental bandwidth is what I'm referring to.
Okay, no, that's good to know as well. Thank you for pointing that out. And then I also would like to understand the due diligence process in Japan. How is that carried out? Is it, yeah, could you maybe walk me through that step as
Yeah,
well?
so if you're buying at this budget, meaning you're buying something that's definitely not going to be, or in most locations, is not going to be 20 years and younger. So we would advise to, once you basically you conduct a viewing first. We can do that in person if you're here, or we can send somebody to do it remotely if you're not here. If you like what you see, we then submit an offer, and on the offer we'll note that it's pending a structural inspection report. And then once the offer is accepted, we'll go ahead and commission a structural inspection, which is going to cost you about $1,000 or $2,000, depending on how big the structure is. And that will give us a snapshot of what the condition of the structure is, and we can sort of roughly estimate some minimums of what you'll need to make it A, livable, and B, durable, right? Because if you leave stuff that's deteriorating, it'll cost more to fix eventually. So the structural inspection report will kind of give us the green light or red light to go ahead with a deal or not. That's the due diligence that we'd normally conduct. Plus, legal matters like, does zoning allow for a rebuild on the same land plot? Does it allow, I mean, the licensing compliance for the Airbnb, for the purpose of Airbnb? Whether there are any unique regulations in that municipality that we need to watch out for, I don't know. So that's all stuff that we'll look at the legal documentation, but the main thing is a structural inspection.
Okay. That is good to know. And then for the other transaction costs, what should I be anticipating?
About 15% normally on top of the listing price. Hopefully less than that, but worst case, about 15%. And that's agent fee, legal and registration fees, and the purchase tax, which comes in somewhere between 6 to 12 months after settlement. But including that, all in total, worst case, 15%.
Okay. Good to know. I believe that covers my key questions. Do you have other questions for me?
Not really. I mean, we'll have a lot more to-ing and fro-ing when we're looking at actual listings, but I think we'll probably cover the basics here.
Okay. Very good.
So have a think and check on your credit line, and then once you know exactly what it is that we're looking for and at what budget, let me know and we'll take it from there.
That sounds great. I will keep you informed once I have more information on my budget, and then we can go for the next steps.
Sounds good. Nice meeting you. Talk to you soon.
Nice to meet you. Thank you.
Bye for now.
Bye.
So there you have it. Three different buyers, three very different sets of requirements, criteria, and budgets, including family homes, holiday homes, and hybrid short-term stay properties. Hopefully, you found yourselves in there somewhere as well. And again, this is probably going to be the last episode before the summit. So if you'd like to meet other people like yourselves, the summit is taking place next weekend, 18th and 19th April, at the Pullman Hotel in Tokyo and online via the stream. Tickets are still available and gala dinner tickets are separate. You can get them all on summit.realestate.jp, but not for much longer. So hop over there right now if you still haven't secured yours. Now, we can't let you go without telling you all about Yen Loans, our latest sponsor. They're a new non-bank lender offering financing to non-residents of Japan for purchases of Tokyo condominiums. Soon to be expanding to other major cities as well, so definitely hit them up if you're looking to purchase in Osaka, Fukuoka, Kyoto, or any other big city too. And that's for any purpose, whether it's a holiday home, investment rental, or a combination of both, without any requirement for residency, a Japanese bank account, a Japanese corporate structure, or representative director, any of these things. And with a streamlined application process too. So reach out to them through the link in our show notes and let them know that you found them on the Japan Real Estate Podcast. And if you're quick enough to be one of the first 10 completed applications, you'll receive a 25% discount. That's 50,000 yen off the 200,000 yen application fee. To qualify, apply through the link in our show notes again or enter the code JREYL on their website, yenloans.com. And that's it from us for this episode, folks. Huge thank you for tuning in. Please do follow and subscribe to the show if this is your first time listening, and we'd love it if you could like and even share this episode with anyone you think might find interest in it. But even more importantly, we love hearing from you. So please let us know what you thought about this episode or the podcast overall in the comments section here on our social media channels. We've got a very active Facebook group and business page, both under the name Japan Real Estate on Facebook. And that's also the name and URL of our YouTube channel if you'd like to follow us there, Japan Real Estate on YouTube as well. And we'd, of course, appreciate your rating or review on Spotify or on the Apple Store or wherever you're tuning in from. Hope to have you with us again. Have a great rest of the day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.